Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for Voice of Indie. Your hosts today are Beam Weeks, author, producer, and marketing monster for independent multimedia publisher Fresh Ink Group, and Stephen Gies, author, producer, composer, and publisher for Fresh Ink Group.
And welcome to another episode of the Voice of Indie podcast. I am your host, Beam Weeks, and this is another Wednesday. How do we get to these things so quickly? Here, back there in the corner, I see him working furiously on something. My co-host, Stephen Gies. How you doing, Stephen?
I'm doing all right. Making progress with my hands. Went and had one of them dipped in hot wax today while it was all taped up. I never quite understood what that was about, but it felt good, so I'm game for it. But I'm just cocky enough now that I can do a couple of things. I actually tied my shoes yesterday, and that gave me so much confidence. I came in here, uncovered the keyboards, and stood there and stared at them for like 10 minutes. Like, it'll be your time one of these days. And then I covered them back up. But how are you doing?
I'm doing good, but, there are people that pay good money to be dipped in wax.
I wouldn't doubt it.
Now, today I am officially a member of Story Empire. And my first blog post on the Story Empire website is up, and it's been up all day. So go visit storyempirecom.wordpress.com. That's storyempirecom.wordpress.com, and my post is right there, so check it out.
And listeners, if you don't like Beam Weeks, there's actually some good writers over there too. Go check it out.
Yeah, and another thing, volumes 4 and 5 of the Concordant Vibrancy short story anthology series are free starting today until January 16th. I've got a story in each of these two volumes. These are from the All Authors Publishing House and contain short stories from some of the absolute best indie authors that are out there right now. There are some tremendously talented writers in there. And you can check that out on Amazon. That's Concordant Vibrancy. And you can go to my blog. I post a little something on there with some links that you can click to it. That's beamweeks.wordpress.com. beamweeks.wordpress.com, and you can go and grab yourself a couple of free copies and read some really cool short stories. So listeners, do you want to join in? Because we want you to join in. That's why we ask you this each and every week. Pick up that phone call, get on Twitter, and here's how you can do that.
Call 516-453-9902 right now and join us on air or tweet us with the hashtag Fresh Ink Group in the body and we'll read your comment or question live. That's 516-453-9902 or hashtag Fresh Ink Group.
All right. These shows go so fantastically well when you, the listening audience, participate.
So we've got some news for all of you people out there who are into publishing your books, especially those of you who work with Ingram, Lightning Source, or any of the other Ingram companies. Printing prices are going up again in a couple of weeks here. Premium paperback prices have gone down in the U.S. market, but hardcovers are going up just slightly. And let me see here, U.S. and also Australia hardcover prices are staying the same, they say. Paperback prices have increased in the U.S. It's the premium paperback prices that are coming down. And in the U.K., prices for everything have gone up. In Australia, paperback prices have gone up, except for the premium color. And here's a weird one. If you do return, if you allow book returns, back in the day, Ingram used to charge $1 a book for the privilege of taking that book back and destroying it for you after you've already paid to have it printed. Went up to $2. Now it's going up to $3 a book. So
Wow. That's
one more reason why Fresh Ink Group tends not to do book returns or take book back, because it's just not worth it. These retailers are good at ordering the amounts that they need in order to meet their expected sales volumes. We'll let them do that. But at any rate, so keep that in mind with all your pricing in the future. A couple of weeks from now, prices are going up on some and either staying the same or slightly decreasing on the premium paperback.
All right. And Robert G. Willis-Croft fans, listen up. The Ort Federation to the stars. The second Ort Chronicle is expected this week, so keep that in mind.
Yeah, we're looking at a release date about the middle of next month and hoping to get it on sale sometime in the coming days, so we'll see how that works out.
Stay on top of these podcasts and all things Fresh Inquiry with our weekly digital newsletter, new releases, videos, stories, excerpts, interviews, and more. Sign up now on the homepage of freshinkgroup.com and be the one who knows what's what.
Now, we do have four audiobooks in production right now, including the Ort Federation, which we've just been talking about, and we've just booked an actress to do Jenny Wong's Girl Wears Those Shoes. And we really did well on that because we had hired a professional actress who's got a really impressive IMDb page to do the voiceover for the commercial, which you hear right here on this show. And I think you'll probably hear it tonight. But we managed to work out a deal and a good price and got the same actress to do the audiobook as well. So that's an example where the name on the cover will have some cachet that goes with it too. So we're looking forward to that. Watch for more audiobooks from Fresh Ink Group.
And Whoopi Likes Her Bacon Crispy by Jay Ashlooney and Hello Chattanooga by David Carroll are this week's bestsellers among Fresh Ink Group books in both soft cover and hardcover. So congratulations to those guys.
Yes, that's an oddity for us because a lot of people, particularly novelists, if they put out a hardcover edition also, that tends to sell, you know, like maybe 5 or 10% as many as the soft covers or the ebooks. It's more of a prestige thing. It's when you want the nice copy to give somebody or to sell somebody or to autograph or whatever, put them out on the table during your events and all of that. But these two books here, the hard covers are actually outselling the soft covers. And that's kind of unusual for us. So we like to get up and dance a little jig when that happens.
If you miss a show, find us in the archive in the Fresh Ink Group channel on YouTube, on Spotify, or under the podcast tab at freshinkgroup.com, beamweeks.com, and stephengees.com. On YouTube, be sure to like and subscribe.
All right. Now, the reason why you guys tuned in. Michael Eging has wanted to write since he was very young. His earliest memories are of carrying a battered old notebook around full of illustrations and stories. He often transposed those ideas on his grandmother's old typewriter. Ooh, I remember typewriters. While in college, he was inspired by professors and visiting writers to BYU. Literary classics such as The Song of Roland and Inferno were often in his backpack, along with Russian textbooks. Chapter 4 of Anwen's Blood was written during this time as a short story. Recently, Mike has pursued an interest in writing screenplays for feature films, with his first option being a medieval epic, Song of Roland. He continues to focus on a variety of script movie projects, most recently a horror thriller, Feast of St. Nicholas, and a political thriller, The Prince. He lives in Northern Virginia with his wife, Lori, and his wonderful children. He dreams of one day driving his old Defender to Alaska with his kids and their dog, Rufus. And welcome to the show, Michael Eging. How are you doing tonight, sir?
Great, thank you. Thank you to both you and Stephen for inviting me.
We are glad to have you in. So you're living in Northern Virginia. Where are you originally from, and where else have you lived, having obviously gone to BYU?
So I grew up on a small farm in Northeast Ohio, and after high school, ended up other places.
Other places. Sounds intriguing.
What kind of other places?
Well, I spent a couple of years in New Zealand, and then came back and went to BYU. After I graduated from BYU, I came to Northern Virginia and was looking to pursue a career in, of all things, Russian history. I love medieval and history and saw myself as a teacher, professor at some point after my graduate program. But I kind of got derailed here in Northern Virginia when I was scrambling to look for work and ended up working on Capitol Hill as a legislative aide.
Cool.
Who'd you work for?
So I worked for Senator Hatch.
Orrin Hatch?
Yes, indeed. And I worked on the what was called the Labor Committee back then, but the Help Committee today, doing work on education policy, healthcare policy, all those types of things. It was really a different time and place for policymaking, because back then people worked together. It was really an incredible experience for me.
Yeah, and Orrin Hatch certainly knew his way around the process. He was a stalwart who'd been there for a while and had all the connections.
Yeah,
now what?
Go ahead. Oh, I was just going to say, when I came in, was looking for work, I applied for a position in his office. And what was interesting was his chief of staff at the time had been a professor at BYU. And she had seen some of my written work through the English department, through book awards or short story awards, writing awards. And, of course, I had worked on the science fiction and fantasy magazine at BYU called The Leading Edge. And so she saw my resume, and they gave me a quick call because she recognized me from school.
Cool.
Yeah, see, that you just answered my question before I even asked it. That's what I was going to ask you about. So, all right. Well, let's jump back a little further to your childhood. You're into writing. We talked a little bit off the air. You're really into writing, and you've been into writing for a long time. So what kind of childhood did you have? A lot of reading and writing? Who inspired you in that?
That's a really good question. I had mentioned I grew up on a farm, and my dad, when I was growing up, used to tell people that he bought the farm to raise boys. I had two other brothers, and back then in the summertime, basically from the time school let out to the time school picked back up again, we were 10, 15 miles away from most of my friends. And so we didn't have cell phones. We didn't have the internet. I couldn't keep up with my friends on social media. So we invented things to do. I did a lot of horseback riding, a lot of chores, as you can imagine. But I would spend the evenings in my tent in a little campsite behind our house in the woods. And I would read comic books, and by flashlight, I would write notes about stories, story ideas. And I read a lot of Robert E. Howard and Michael Moorcock and Tolkien, and spent my summers basically dreaming of distant lands.
So basically you spent your childhood living life, which is cool because nowadays it's video games and smartphones and whatnot and social media and not enough getting out and about and doing things.
Well, and I was in the generation just before some of those things. By the time I was in college, we already had video games and computer games. We had access to computers in college, and so we would play video games on Friday nights with my friends and I and things like that. But you're right, in the summertime, it was get your chores done, and then the rest of the day was inventing things to entertain yourself.
So we got some comments on Twitter, Beam.
All right.
Verwayne Greenhouse says, hello, everyone. We are here. I hope the evening finds everyone as happy and healthy as possible.
Hello,
you want to take the next one?
And Lisa. Sure. The next one is Dr. Helen Burrell. She says, apoplectic or apocalyptic? Enter unusual worlds that'll spirit you away from your COVID-restricted lives, invented by the imaginative mind, unbounded by the ordinary. Author Michael Eging, think of his talented brain as Imagination Nation. Thank you,
yeah.
Dr. Helen.
And Marlena Smith says, hi, fellas. Looking forward to tonight's show. Just glad I made it. It was a close call. Oh, I know. We were watching, Marlena, and rooting for you, and you got there just in time. Welcome to the show.
And I am seeing here on Twitter, Ronnie Spector of the Ronettes has passed away at the age of 78.
Oh, no.
That's too bad. There's a lot of them from that generation that are leaving. And we're looking at, you know, you got people like Paul McCartney and Eric Clapton and Ringo Starr and, you know, just all those old ones, you know, they're getting up there.
So you want to roll a commercial?
I can do that.
Is this going to be the world premiere?
This is the world premiere for Robert G. Willis-Cross, the Ort Federation to the Stars, the Second Ort Chronicle.
As the Ort Federation becomes a major force in the solar system, Braxton Thorpe passes the Federation chairmanship to former U.S. President John Butler. Thorpe's group offers humanity virtual immortality, but Isidore Orlov and his Udakhni Enterprises oppose their every move. While terraforming Mars for more living space, the Mars Reds prove formidable as resistors. If the Asterian Starship fighter pilots are released, will they align with Phoenix or Udakhni? And who will develop the right FTL technology? In this tense space adventure, Thorpe, his team, and Max the Tabby Cat travel to Proxima Centauri and beyond to the Aster system, 84 light years distant. Will Thorpe bring together humans and Asterians in their quest for intergalactic travel? Will long life prove more than mere humans can handle? Grab Icicle, a Tensor Matrix, the First Ort Chronicle, and continue the journey with the Ort Federation to the Stars. Proudly published in all print, digital, and sensory-enhanced audiobook by Fresh Ink Group.
We are enhancing your sensories. Don't forget that book is expected this week, so keep that in mind.
Yeah, the video for it is in production, too. We were working on that today, and hopefully that'll be up in the next couple of days as well. Over on YouTube, where we like it when you subscribe, we like it when you hit that like button, and we like it when you share.
All right. Michael, you mentioned going to BYU. How did you end up there? Being from Ohio, how did you end up out west?
Well, I did my first year of college at Kent State University. And I had an incredible history professor there. And then I spent a couple of years in New Zealand. When I was coming back, I was looking at various schools that I could go to. And I spoke to a couple of my friends about BYU and the English department there. And what was amazing about it, I applied and didn't think I had good enough grades to get in. And fortunately for me, they didn't go off my high school grades, but my first year at Kent State, where I pulled some very good grades and got accepted. And the program there included working on the Leading Edge magazine. The English department really encouraged young authors to get out there and get their work where people could read it. I had a wonderful mentor there named Doc Smith, but also another mentor of mine, someone I really have looked up to my whole life, even after BYU, is Dave Farland, who's that's his pen name, Dave Wolverton, who wrote Courtship of Leia and many other novels. So I had some really, really good mentors while I was at BYU. So that's kind of how I got there and the experience I had. There's a program there being called Life, the Universe, and Everything. And every spring we had visiting authors who would come in.
And they would spend time with the students. And being on the leading edge staff, I got to meet them. And, you know, it was just a wonderful atmosphere to kind of seed the ground for someone who wanted to write.
Yeah, that sounds like the ideal type of situation. If you're there to be a writer and you get to meet these established authors, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, it was. Just the time that they would take with us around, you know, the meetings, the events, and share with us their writing experience, what fueled their kind of stories and things like that. It was just really incredible to be able to draw on that. And, Dave Wolverton, I remember spending many nights with him after we had been working on the leading edge, and he would, you know, give me encouragement and talk to me about some of the plots and things that I wanted to do in a short story or a novel, and just a really good experience.
That's cool. Steven?
So tell us about your family. Are you married? You got kids, grandkids?
I am married, and we have 5 children. I have 3 grandchildren, although it's hard for me to believe that that's the part of life I'm in now. That's the phase I'm moving into now. Our youngest is still in high school. This is his last year. And so we're kind of straddling both of those, still being a parent and now moving into the world of being a grandparent.
Are you seeing any budding writers among them?
Actually, yes. My oldest daughter wrote quite a bit while she was going to school. My middle daughter, who's preparing to go to medical school, has creative writing interests. But also my second child, who is my oldest son, Eric, he has begun drafting out novel ideas, starting to put things together, and he shares some of those with me, and I've just been encouraging him to pursue it and get that work out there where people can read it.
So none of them have published anything yet. They're just in the developing stage.
Correct. My daughter did do a novel. It was intended to be a trilogy, but it's just the first book that she had released almost 10 years ago. I hope someday she picks it back up and continues that story. It was a lot of fun.
So you said you're married?
I am to my wife, Lori.
And what does she do?
Oh, she actually works for a software company that does work in the educational field, Blackboard. And so she gets to work from home.
Nice.
Oh, Can't beat that.
You cannot beat that. Having, commuted into Washington, D.C. every day myself from Northern Virginia, and over the past 2 years been able to, spend less time in my car, I see the benefits of doing that now.
Yeah, and speaking of that, what is your current day job? We know that you work for Orrin Hatch. What's your current day job?
I do public affairs work. And that can range in things from doing media and press work to doing policy development, advocacy, which you could use the other word, lobbying. So I do that on occasion as well. But a lot of my work is writing educational, informational pieces that assist people in policymaking and helping particularly of late, working in the rare disease community with rare disease patients and with communities to help them get the resources that they need. And so I've been doing that work for almost 15 years. So I write in the evenings, Beam, and then, during the day, I spend a lot of time writing for, various clients and various groups that I work with.
It's nice to be able to shift gears like that and do different kinds of writing in order to keep it fresh and interesting.
Yeah.
Well, And the fantasy writing and science fiction writing keeps me sane. So
yeah.
It's nice to have a pressure valve. Yeah, you know, when you come home and you're a little frustrated and things aren't quite going or shaping the way you think and they should be going. And when the family goes to bed, everything's quiet and you're just sitting there with that screen and suddenly the ideas start coming. And it's, for me, it's a release from the stresses and from all the things going on during the day.
Cool. Now, we've got a couple of questions for you over on Twitter. Before we read those, we're going to roll another commercial here. This is for Girl Wears Those Shoes. We mentioned earlier that her book is out. We are working on the audiobook for it, and we are getting ready to launch the website, JennyWongAuthor.com, in support of all of that as well. And that should be up sometime in the next couple of days as well. But the commercial you're about to hear, there's a video for it in the Fresh Ink Group channel on YouTube. Go watch the video. Hit like, subscribe, share, put money in an envelope and mail it our way, whatever you feel like doing.
All right.
Aspiring young Chinese immigrant, GGO, survives by working as a stripper, but she strives for true success in the U.S. real estate industry. Navigating this highly competitive business is tough, especially when her only support comes from the deeply flawed man she loves and her old cohorts from the strip club. Issues of betrayal and trust, loyalty and commitment complicate her goals, even as one lesbian friend adds new dimensions to her understanding of love versus desire. Then the market crashes and financial turmoil threatens to rob GGO of all she has achieved. Can she find new ways to chase her dreams and still manage to keep her clothes on? Or might she find a better reason to take them off? Girl Wears Those Shoes is a tale of love and power. The story of one woman who wants to make the world her own, if only she can figure out how. Proudly published by Fresh Ink Group, Girl Wears Those Shoes is available in all hardcover, softcover, and all digital formats worldwide.
That's a fun video, too. Now, Michael, over on Twitter, Marlena Smith says, I love that your family is creative. And then she asks, do you ever have brainstorming sessions or any fun writing activities together?
Oh, good question.
Oh, that is a good question. Yes, we do. Honestly, it's become a little more challenging now that, you know, the oldest ones have grown up and are starting to have their own families and moved away. But I haven't talked about my younger daughter, Gwen, yet. Gwen is my biggest cheerleader. And Gwen helps me with a lot of the promotion and marketing of my work. She helps me with creative lead behind. She helps me. Oh, she designed all our banners that we use at Comic Cons. And she is just really loves creative things. And we will often talk in the car about creative ideas. And in fact, the final short story in the recent collection that I released in 2020 called Tales of Lost Horizon is titled Cast Iron Sights. And that came from a discussion with my daughter over the course of a few Comic Cons just before the lockdowns and COVID. And so during the pandemic, I sat down and bounced some ideas off of her and then wrote that short story for her. But often my children will read my work. When they were younger, I would tell them stories that would eventually become some of the short stories or ideas that I was starting to noodle around for a screenplay or some poetry. And so there's a lot of that, but I also love reading my children's work. So for example, my son, during the pandemic, actually wrote a short story about some of his experiences in China. And it's a wonderful short story that's very, very focused. It's a very, in a big backdrop, it's a very small character story about the interactions between people in China from very different walks of life. And I love that story. And hopefully he takes it further as well.
Wow.
All right. Yeah, we're going to talk about Tales of the Lost Horizon here in a little bit, but we do have another question. Verwayne Greenhoe on Twitter, realizing that explaining this is a full book itself, how does writing a screenplay differ from writing a murder story? I have a little insight, but I would bet that many listeners would like to know more about those differences. And he says, thanks for being here tonight.
Well, thank you for the question. And he's right. It could be a whole novel or a whole book in and of itself. You know, when I was younger, I didn't really appreciate the differences. And when I was in college, I wrote the screenplay treatment for Song of Roland at the encouragement of one of my professors. But as with many things in life, that screenplay treatment sat on a hard drive for a number of years. And when I came back to it, my kids were in high school. I was shuttling them back and forth to various activities. And I started to think to myself, well, I can do this. I can write a screenplay. And so I took the treatment and started working it, reworking it, and delivered a 200-page script. Well, fortunately for me, I was able to find someone in Los Angeles by the name of Paul Young, who had done some work in the 90s on a couple of big projects. He had also done some script work with the Lord of the Rings, and he took me under his wing. And I learned that there were huge differences, and I hadn't really taken them into account as I had done my first attempt. When you write a novel, you are often like the director of a film. And not only are you working with the characters and the actors, but you're also world building. And so you will not only be responsible for the sets that your characters play in, but conveying all of that information to the reader in a way that's digestible so that they can then become a participant in the story. Because actually the production of your novel's story occurs in someone's imagination. And so you as the director have to give them all the elements so that they can put it together and imagine they're in your world. With a screenplay, it's very different. And I've learned this over the years, is that you are not the director. You are a storyteller. And so you need to tell that story with economy, but in such a way that it leaves the director the latitude to interpret the story and imagine it so that it can be translated to film. So instead of describing the castle or the colors in the sky or the dragon's wing sounds and this and that, you're basically putting together the framework. And so the dragon flew through the sky and landed, you know, and the castle is in a backdrop and you may not even describe any of it. And so it becomes kind of a framework for a bigger production that's collaborative between the director, the actors, the set crews, the all the components of, you know, a film production versus a novel where you're delivering someone that production and allowing their imagination then to be where that takes place.
So it's basically, like you said, framework, a stripped down version of what you would write in a novel. I remember talking to somebody here, this was years ago, and they were working on a screenplay. And I remember, because I've never written a screenplay, and I just know what's different from a novel. And they were saying basically, you know, there's certain things in there you don't want to put in there because the director is going to have his own decisions for these things. So just, you know, tell your story, you know, without going too deep into it with the descriptions.
Yeah, way back in the day, I produced a lot of video and directed some of it. And that was our number one beef is we'd get these scripts from people and they'd be trying to dictate camera angles and pans and zooms and things like that. And it's like, no. You give us enough to see the picture and then it's our job to interpret that and present it. So you actually turn off producers and directors when you try to step too much into doing their job, because it's a little frustrating to sort through all that, and they'd much rather have something that's very spare.
Absolutely. And as a screenwriter, you want someone to be able to digest your story in an accelerated read, I guess is the best way for me to describe that, where they can sit down and really move through the story. And some of those things that you described, Stephen, like camera angles and moving this or that, or those are distracting from the story.
Yeah.
Tell the story, make it a powerful story, let the characters breathe in your story, but exactly, don't tell the director how to direct it. Let him come in with his imagination and take that next step. Sell him on the idea, sell him on the story.
Yeah. We do have a follow-up question from Marlena. She says, thank you for answering, Michael. That's so awesome. I have a follow-up question. Would you, meaning you and your family, would you all consider creating a family anthology? Ooh.
Oh,
and
wow.
Are you adopting?
That's a big question. I think it would be fun. If you looked and get a chance to read Tales of the Lost Horizon, my daughter, Gwen, actually stepped in and worked with all the artists and helped them direct the artwork and all of that. And so when I published that, it feels like an anthology because Gwen was my partner. Even though I wrote the content, she was my partner in the creative aspects of the story, which includes the artwork throughout the book. I think that would be fun. I'm not sure how I would pry my children loose from some of the things that they've got going to say, hey, can we do something like that together? But that sounds like a fun idea and maybe worth sharing it with them and seeing what they say.
You just tell them Marlena said.
Yeah. Now, when you're working on your projects, how do you develop them? Do you use beta readers and editors and whatnot?
So, yes. We currently have a novel, Beam, that is that we are wrapping up, and we have between 5 and 6 beta readers. Most of them have some writing experience. A couple of them don't. They're just readers who read a lot in our genre. So what we will do is often go through and do, as an author, self-editing is a real skill. And so after we've gone through the writing, we will often rewrite work sometimes 5, 6, 7, 8, and maybe even more times, edit ourselves and try to get it in really, you know, good shape, and then it goes to the beta readers. And from them, we try to pick up on themes, try to pick up on some of the really important comments that we might get back on characters or structure or areas of the book that just didn't make sense or didn't flow for them. And then we'll go back and rewrite.
Now, and then that gives me a secondary question here, because you brought this up and it's something I never really thought of. For beta readers, would you rather have a beta reader that's a writer or a beta reader that's a reader? Because they're going to offer two different takes on this.
Correct. And so, yeah, we mix it up a little bit. So we've got
which
a couple of people who are writers and write. I really value both perspectives.
Both of them. Okay.
But I enjoy the person who's a reader and trying to build that world in their own imagination from what you've said or what you've written. And so for me, if that clicks with them, and that's really, for me, it's an amazing experience to be that close to someone who's read your book. And so, like I said, I value both very much, but I really am interested in someone who is just reading it because they want to read it.
All right.
I think it's time for another commercial, Beam.
All righty. This one is Operation Counterpunch.
North Korea will be the biggest challenge to your presidency, warned the outgoing commander-in-chief. but to imprisoned journalist John Jason, surviving each day in the prison camp proves the greatest challenge of his life. Protecting beautiful young prisoner Jisoo has also grown increasingly difficult for this slight man, otherwise powerless, but for his prowess at deceiving their captors. Navy SEAL Andrew Gunner Jackson is tasked by the president himself with gathering intel from the Hermit Kingdom. It's a dangerous gamble where capture means summary execution, if he's lucky, or death the slow way in a North Korean prison re-education camp. Information is the least of his concerns, though, as the president agrees, he can leverage this mission to satisfy a few goals of his own. How far will each man go to fend off the cruel machinations of a ruthless dictator? And will that be enough for either to survive? Operation Counterpunch is ready to read now. Proudly published in hardcover, paperback, and all ebook formats by Fresh Ink Group. By Mark Marlowe. Operation Counterpunch.
That video is on YouTube. Go over there and check it out. Fresh Ink Group channel. Like, subscribe.
Indeed. Check over here real quick. All right, so Verwayne Greenhill, he's got a comment here. He says, thank you, Michael. I appreciate your answer. Also, thanks for the input, Stephen and Bean. That's interesting with the whole, I never really gave it that kind of a thought with the beta readers about, you know, some are going to be writers and some are going to be readers. That's just kind of an interesting little angle there. So, Michael.
We are still looking for our first caller out there. If you want to call in, it's 516-453-9902. Don't leave us hanging.
Come on. I mean, we would love to have you call in and ask a question or just say hello, you know, leave a comment or not leave a comment, but just come in and make a comment. 516-453-9902. And you, if you're caller number 7. So, Michael, what kind of fan reaction are you getting from your work? What kind of feedback, you know, review-wise or just people talking to you?
It really depends. And let me qualify that. We just went and this summer got to go to our first live author event in a year and a half at AwesomeCon. And what was really gratifying, Beam, was we had people actually come looking for us.
Ooh,
because
that's
they had
a good sign.
They had read a couple of our books. And, of course, we hadn't been there for almost 2 years at that point. And yet we had people come in and say, hey, I wanted to get your next book. And, we got to really have those kinds of conversations. And so I love that kind of interaction with people. Like with everything you do, you get reviews that you're like, oh my gosh, that's so incredible. And then, you know, you might get a review that's, oh goodness, where's the rock I'm crawling under now? And so you learn to kind of take everything and try to look at it in the balance and, try to have a sense of humor about who you are and what you're doing. But, it doesn't matter the review. I'm just glad someone picked it up and was able to get into it and read it. But I've been very grateful for some of the reviews and also for some of the awards that we've gotten from our writing. And, it's been a great ride. I think the most important thing to me is that people are reading it.
So you open the front door and there's a flaming bag of something on the porch. Just stick your head out and yell, that's a cliche. That's just cliche.
Oh, yeah.
All right. We've mentioned this a few times now, Tales of the Lost Horizon, which I have to tell you, I actually went and purchased it last night and it's sitting on my Kindle and it's on a large pile called the TBR list, but I will get to it and I will review it. Let's open up a little bit about this, Tales of the Lost Horizon.
So Tales of the Lost Horizon was actually instigated by my youngest daughter, Gwen. We were, you know, kind of talking about what could we do? What are some things that would be kind of fun to do with some of the content and things? And she said, well, Dad, you know, you've got all these stories and poems that are sitting on your hard drive. And, you know, you tell me about them. You know, I know that you've gotten a couple of them published here and there, but wouldn't it be great to do something with that? And so this whole volume actually was instigated by my daughter, and she's been my wonderful partner in my going back and rereading, editing, rewriting, and pulling together the content. And then she worked with these wonderful up-and-coming artists who jumped into the content and provided illustrations. So each story is different. So you're going to have a range of stories everywhere from early mythology all the way through to science fiction, fantasy, and then post-apocalyptic. But the artwork by each artist is different and very compelling, and I'm just really proud of it and the work that she did with me to get this book out so that people could see it.
Okay.
So what is the mix? I mean, it's poetry and short stories. Is it about half and half? I mean, how much do you have of each?
So it is about half and half, but of course the short stories take up most of the volume of the book. Most of the short stories, again, they range, but a lot of them skew towards fantasy and science fiction because that's where my interests are. Some of them were written back when I was in college. So there's some short stories that actually won collegiate awards. And then there's short stories and things that I've written a little bit later in my life that are a very different writing style. I write very differently than when I was a junior in college. And so you'll get a sense of my journey through life as you read the stories because my writing style changes and grows and hopefully develops and into something that people enjoy to read. But I've noticed that as I put them together, that my editing style on them was very different than I would today in a book. We just finished the second book of our Paladin of Shadow Chronicles. And I go through and I do a very thorough edit in my style today. But I didn't want to lose the voice of these stories. And so my editing style was very differently, you know, tried to be a lighter touch and tried to have some of my writing style from the various points in my life be able to shine through in terms of the progression through the stories.
Now, speaking of the artwork, you talked about there being a lot of artwork in there. Who does your book covers for you? Now, we had talked about, and you had mentioned the name Jordan Rask, and he sounds quite impressive. So why don't you tell us a little bit about him?
So Jordan Raskin is a friend of mine now, but at the time when I was working on a horror script, Feast of St. Nicholas, we were trying to put together some creature concepts that we could utilize as we were marketing to producers and production companies. And I just cold called Jordan and said, hey, could you work on this horror project with me? He had a fantastic resume, as you pointed out. He had worked for Marvel and DC Comics. He's done storyboard work for various film and television productions, and is currently doing storyboard work for a sitcom. And so he and I got to know each other as we would bounce back and forth around these creature concepts for this horror film. And when we finished, I was like, this is such an amazing, talented person. I want to work with him again. And so when we wrapped up the Silverhorn Echoes, the Song of Roland,
I contacted Jordan again and said, hey, could you do this book cover for this novel that we did? It's a historical kind of light fantasy novel about Roland from the great medieval French epic, La Chanson de Roland, or Song of Roland. And Jordan said, of course, I'll do that for you. He loved that story. He really connected with the material. He was working on a comic book concept set in the Roman Empire. So creatively, he was already kind of geared up to do this sort of work. Well, Jordan took some of the concepts and things that I shared with him and sent us back some concept artwork. And once we nailed that down, Jordan hand-painted each cell that was utilized to assemble the final cover.
Wow.
And he digitized it and assembled the cover. And so when you look at The Silver Horn Echoes, A Song of Roland, and you look into the cover, there are layers of detail as you look from front to back, from the horse and the knight that dominate the front cover, into the background knights and siege of a city and all the things that are going on in that background. You can kind of go right through the layers and see detail that you didn't realize could exist in a book cover. And so Jordan has just really been such a phenomenal talent, and I look forward to working with him again on additional books as well.
Cool.
So The Silver Horn Echoes, A Song of Roland, and that's a separate book from Anwen's, is it Anwen's or Anwen's Blood?
Yes, yes. It's a standalone adventure. You get the entire story of Roland and the Knights of Charlemagne and their battles and their victories. You get a lot of the betrayal and all the court machinations all in one novel. Anwen's Blood is the first book of a trilogy. The second book is currently being prepared for beta readers right now. And once we move through the beta readers, we'll go to editing and then hopefully production later this spring.
So what's your publishing process? How do you put these books out? You work with a publisher, you self-publish? What's your process?
So the process has changed over the years. Anwen's Blood was our first attempt, and we had a really super good editor for Anwen's Blood, and he was a pleasure to work with. He has since left editing, but that was kind of the bar that we had. And Steve and I, Steve Arnold, who is my co-author and has been my friend since sixth grade, we published Anwen's Blood on our own and went through Kindle Direct and, you know, got it out there. For The Silver Horn Echoes, we felt that we weren't adequate for the story. It's a big, sprawling epic, and we really wanted to make a bigger impact. We didn't really know what we were doing, even with our experience on Anwen's Blood. So we actually went with iUniverse.
Well, that's a one from the past.
Yes, The Silver Horn Echoes was actually through work that we did with iUniverse. Now, that was a mixed bag. Their editing was phenomenal, but some of the strategy and book launch things were not quite what we would have wanted. So with Tales of the Lost Horizon, Steve and I kind of explored again how to do this. And we did everything from soup to nuts. We found the artists for the book cover. We did the editing and worked through the editing. And then we did the layout, and we went through Ingram Spark. Because of all the work and all the things that we learned from launching The Silver Horn Echoes, we actually developed our own marketing plans. We got it out for book reviews. We did a lot of the promotional work. all those sorts of things, and used Tales of Lost Horizon as a test case for us. The next volume of Anwyn's Blood, which is called Ash and Ruin, we will be launching on our own. And so, you know, it's kind of evolved, I guess, is the easiest way to explain it.
Yeah, and Spark is probably the best resource for going independent, doing indie, like self-publishing and stuff, too, because they've got all the resources of Ingram behind them. What about you're doing an audiobook too, right, for Anwyn?
Yes. So we've done audiobooks for Anwyn's Blood, The Silverhorn Echoes, and Tales of the Lost Horizon. And each of them is very, very different, but we're very proud of all of them. We found our voice actor for Anwyn's Blood is a professionally trained Shakespearean actor named Josh Interest. And what was interesting to me, Stephen, is as I got to know Josh, he's based in Cleveland, right near my old hometown in Ohio. It is a small world, particularly given that he had trained with the Royal Shakespearean Company. And what's interesting with this experience is that when we did the auditions for Anwyn's Blood, the young woman named Cian Steen, she auditioned for Anwyn's Blood. And so even though she didn't get that novel, she became the narrator for Tales of Lost Horizon. But she's just got such a wonderful, warm, kind of around the fire kind of voice that you could almost imagine her being when I was a kid, sitting on the other side of a campfire telling the story. And Josh was, when he approached his audition, he had thought through each character. Each character had a different voice and feel. And the story came alive in that kind of layered fashion, even though it was one person. And so you literally felt like someone was reading your screenplay at a table read. Each character was defined. They had a different kind of tone and voice. And he just had this incredible grasp of the material because of some of the work he's done from his theatrical background. And it was incredible. I was sold as soon as I heard his audition. And hopefully we're going to be able to work with him on the second volume as well.
So are you doing this yourself independently, or are you doing it like through ACX, like with their shared royalty program?
Yes, and that's exactly how we did it, Stephen. Being novices, we just went through ACX. We set up the auditions, put together the audition script, went through all the various submissions, which I was amazed how many talented artists were looking for material. And we had some wonderful voice reading, and then we're able to select and proceed with production through ACX.
So you're pitching a screenplay out there right now, is that right?
I am. I actually have three screenplays that I'm pitching, and working on finishing another one. And just this last week was scribbling some notes for an additional future screenplay.
Well, you know, one thing that we're noticing is a lot of people are publishing their screenplays in book form, even if they're out there pitching them and trying to get a deal for them at the same time. Have you considered doing something like that?
Well, that's where Silverhorn Echoes, A Song of Roland, basically grew from. You know, it had been optioned, and unfortunately, Alan Kaplan, who was with a small production company called Cine LA, he died of cancer just a few months into the option. And so I was sitting with this screenplay that I really, really believed in. And I wanted it to go someplace. And so I sat down and began writing it as a novel. Now, that's not quite the same as publishing my screenplay per se, but that is the genesis from The Silverhorn Echoes, The Song of Roland, is that I wanted people to be able to read the story, even if it wasn't in film yet.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, several of our writers are doing that. Like Larry Landgraf, for example, has got a series of screenplays out now, and they're selling well. People like reading in that kind of format.
I read one years ago, and it was Stephen King, but he had written the it was a mini series, I believe. Then he turned it into a book, and it was a script basically, and it was really cool to read. Different, but it was cool.
It is, and it's a lot of fun because you get to be the director and kind of bring the world to life as you're reading through a screenplay. The other thing that we've considered and are seriously looking at is taking some of our screenplay and then rewriting them as graphic novel scripts.
Yeah.
And then working with artists and, of course, bringing that all to life. And so that's something that we may take on in the next year or so. But we've been seriously considering it. Because of the way we had begun our book covers, using artists who work in the comic industry, we spend a lot of time at Comic-Cons. And we thought, wouldn't it be wonderful to actually bring one of our screenplays as a graphic novel?
Yeah, that would be great, especially if the subject matter is something that appeals to younger audiences, many of whom are only looking for graphic novels when they go shopping for books to read.
Mm-hmm. They are. And that's why Tales of the Lost Horizon was a little different for me, because my daughter really wanted those young people to stop at our booth and pick up the book and walk away with the book.
Yeah. So, Michael, do you have any advice for other authors out there?
Well, that's a loaded question.
Mm-hmm. It's one of my favorites. That's why we save it for right before the end.
my advice is write every day. If it's a sentence, if it's 10 pages, even if it's just an idea or a thought. My screenplay, Feast of St. Nicholas, came to fruition because I was writing every day, and one day back many years ago, I wrote down one line, and it was, young boy wakes up, goes to the window on Christmas Eve, looks through the window, and sees Santa Claus.
There you go.
Feast of St. Nicholas. Feast of St. Nicholas flowed from that idea that I happened to write down that day.
Cool.
And so that's my advice is write every day. And master your craft by doing that, even if it's, you know, just getting a few paragraphs on your commute into work or over lunch or, you know, after the kids go to bed. Whatever is going in your life, make just writing those few minutes a priority. Tune things out and just say, okay, I'm going to write a few things. And before you know it, it goes from a few things to a few pages. It goes from a few pages to maybe now you're accomplishing a chapter here and a chapter there. And before you know it, something gets finished. That's my advice is write and write every day.
Fine advice that is.
Yes, indeed.
So Michael Eging, novelist, screenwriter, how do people find you? How do they get in touch with you? Social media, you got some handles that you want to share, website, blog, Facebook, Instagram?
You can find me at Paladin of Shadows, and you can find me, of course, on Twitter. My handle is at Michael Eging, and I'm active on both Facebook, Twitter, as well as on Instagram. And then we do have a website, but it is currently being revised. But you can find our old website at www.silverhornechoes, all one word, .com.
And do you have a blog?
You'll be able to find my blog there. I also have a blog, but I am not as active a blogger as Beam or you are, but you can find it on Goodreads.
Okay, Goodreads.
All right. Well, Michael, this has been a lot of fun introducing
definitely.
You to our listeners. You're a writer for all occasions. I mean, that's, you're a true writer with the different things that you do. That's commendable.
Well, thank you for inviting me. I just really appreciated the opportunity to reconnect, Beam, and of course, Stephen, to meet you for the first time. But Beam has been someone I've respected and enjoyed his work as well, and look forward to reading some of your new things.
Well, cool. Thank you.
Well, that's better than a flaming bag of something on the porch.
That's not marshmallows you're talking about, right?
Yeah, no, not quite.
Flaming bag of marshmallows.
Yeah, I've seen your name and I've seen you around, Michael, and I've always wanted to meet you. So this has been a treat for me as well. Thanks for coming. And Beam, who have we got next week?
Next week we have Richard W. Jenkins. He's another interesting one. He's a poet, a Taekwondo grandmaster, and he owns a water utility company. Go figure.
Go figure. It's in Texas, which, you know, explains a lot. And then the week after that, January 26th, we have James Welpley. He writes hard-boiled detective-style thrillers. He's an author and, oh, I love this, he's a cliche aficionado. I see that and I freeze in my tracks.
And following that, February 2nd, we have Aichen Chang Lim come into the studio. She's an author and she's a memoirist. So tune in for that one.
February 9th, we have Abigail Hugh Guinea. You've heard the commercial. You've heard us talk about it. She's the one who wrote the book about so many of the fourth generation descendants of slaves in Green Pond, South Carolina, who have gone on and made really important accomplishments in their own lives and in the world. A lot of people to be proud of. It's a very inspirational book. And for a fairly regional book, it's selling really well. So we're excited to have Abigail Hugh Guinea on. And after that,
On February the 16th is a return visit by Carlisle Toms. So he had a book out the last time he was on, and he's got something new coming out, and I believe he's republishing an older book as well. So tune in for that.
And then February 23rd, we have independent musician Frankie Ray. She sings, she plays guitar. She smiles a magic smile, and we're looking forward to having her on. And she's from the Tampa area. She's got some music out, and she's got some things to say. So February 23rd, mark your calendars, Frankie Ray.
Frankie Ray. Now, Michael, before we leave, what I forgot to tell you off the air is when the show ends, the phones die. So we'll be cut off, but we're going to give you a quick call right afterwards just to kind of touch base with you. So keep an ear out for the phone ringing.
Terrific. Thank you.
All right. Thanks again, Michael. And we'll see everybody next week.
Thanks, Michael. Thanks, everybody in Twitter. So we'll catch you again next week.
You've been a part of Voice of Indy, a production of Fresh Ink Group. Spread the word, support our guests, then find us at freshinkgroup.com and be sure to hashtag Fresh Ink Group.